Hi, this is Andrew Lincoln, and you're listening to the Walking Dead Girl Podcast, Baboomski.
Hello, everybody. This is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
And I'm the Walking Dead Girl. You're listening to the Walking Dead Girl, episode 134. In this podcast, we review and discuss the hit TV show, The Walking Dead from AMC. In addition to reviewing the show, we play listener feedback, so join the conversation.
So if you want to give us feedback, send email to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. And you can also post a comment on our Facebook page, facebook.com/thewalkingdeadgirlpodcast.
Before we get started, I want to remind you guys that we will be discussing every gory detail about the TV show, so obviously there will be spoilers. So make sure you've watched the current episode before listening.
And this was a great episode, I think.
I liked it. I liked it because it was like very action heavy and things were happening. And oh my gosh, the ending. I loved every scene with Rick because like that was, it's like that, we'll talk about that scene. That was my favorite scene.
Well, the ending, you mean the surprise ending?
The surprise ending, and also him trying, like, seeing himself do this thing for the first time and, like, really look like that mirror scene was so strong. I was like, oh, look at yourself.
But I think the whole episode overall, I think, was much better than the first one, though. It had good editing. Like, it was continuous. It wasn't chopped up like the first one, and it wasn't going back and forth and all that. It was very linear. When they were cutting between the groups, it was done very well, where they were picking key scenes.
Mm-hmm, things that were important.
Yeah, and they were like juxtaposing one group's actions with the other, and almost like they were the same scene, but they weren't, right?
Mm-hmm,
they were kind of mirroring things, you know?
Mm-hmm. And I liked the whole unveiling of the plan, not feeling left out about Aaron's group when they were murdering that high-ranking savior, what's her name? Mara or something?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were cornering them and then using the walkers to pick off the rest.
Mm-hmm.
I also did like the close-ups. It kind of reminded me of like a video game. You know, like of some video games, they're very like role-playing video games that have the character's face up close in the load-up menu. That's what it felt like. They're like kind of moving and like constantly aware.
Well, the opening mirrors the ending, right? Because the opening has the faces and then the ending has the same faces.
Mm-hmm, exactly.
So it's like bookends of the episode.
Yeah, I liked that. I liked that. I thought that was good.
And it was basically showing the faces at the beginning and then showing what they were thinking, like, oh, we're going to go into this war. And at the end, all the result of what happened in that episode affects them on their face, I guess.
Right, yeah. And even though like the battle isn't over, we still get to develop the characters. Like, that's something that I was hoping they'd keep. Like, yeah, you can have an all-out war, but I like the immediate consequences for the characters.
Yeah, because all of those characters that they showed their faces at the beginning went through some struggles in this episode.
Yep.
And some difficulties, so that's kind of showing on their face. I think this episode was much better. I mean, and from the first one, I was very disappointed. I thought, okay, this is going downhill. And from the second episode, it's like, okay, I'm back on board now. I'm a willing participant in this adventure.
I'm not being dragged along. You're part of the show, yeah. And I guess maybe that's the challenge when it comes to having an episode premiere. There's so much pressure to be perfect and to be better than the last premiere, especially if you hype it up. But now I think because our expectations were so low, we were pleasantly surprised.
I don't know. Maybe there's some truth to some people are saying, you know, Greg Nicotero is not a good director, and it was his fault of the episode. I don't know. He has done some great episodes, but you know, the first one versus the second one, it seems like it's a day and night kind of thing. I don't know.
Mm-hmm, almost, yeah.
Yeah, like there were so many moments in this episode that I was I was like involved and excited on the edge of my seat, you know. Mm-hmm, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've got all the elements we wanted.
All the things we were looking for. Do you think they maybe like edited it last minute because they got such a bad review?
No.
Could they do that?
No, but we do see that it's the story keeps going on. Like there's a lot of things that were left hanging and we we get the feeling that this war is like going into part three on next episode. I mean, Ezekiel and Carol's group are still haven't been in battle yet, right?
Yeah.
So we need to see that, and that's probably going to be on the third one to see how what they go through. So a lot to see, a lot to look forward to, I think.
Which is good. But do you believe that it's still a good idea to have the war be continued on for the next couple of episodes? Because it doesn't seem like it's ending anytime soon.
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, from what I heard, because we, you know, as you both of us don't read the comics, which is great because we don't have any spoilers in our head.
Right, or we're not always disappointed. I mean, we're still disappointed, but like...
We don't compare and contrast every time with the comics.
Right.
We come into it cold and we enjoy it a little bit more, I think.
Exactly, yeah.
But from what I heard, in the comic, the war ends pretty quickly. It doesn't last this long.
Oh!
So perhaps it's a good idea to have it last longer because then we can enjoy it more, enjoy the action more.
Yeah.
Than what's in the comic. So let's just dive into it. And we talked about how the opening shows the people's faces. And let's take it by each group.
That's easier to group them together.
It's easier to group it together and analyze it rather than going back and forth.
Wait, you have some things about the previous episode. Do you want to talk about some of that?
We can talk about one thing that I was a little confused. I mean, this episode wasn't perfect. The confusion lies in kind of the mentality of the group, because one thing I'm not sure about, because in the first episode they showed Rick talking to the groups like, okay, we're not gonna kill everyone, only Negan,
but
and only the people that have to be killed, like who are following Negan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this message is clear throughout the whole group, because we see it played out in this episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
We see Tara and Jesus arguing about who to kill and who not to kill.
Right. And that became a much bigger thing than I thought it was going to be, because Tara is really on a rampage with not really taking any prisoners.
Yeah. So it doesn't.
But Jesus is like, no, we can't kill everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Pulling a Morgan.
Like an early sort of part two Morgan.
Early version. Yeah.
But, and then also Morgan had some things where it's like, okay, we kill everybody and then we don't. Like, what are you doing here?
Right. Cause he's done the switch, but he's also kind of reverted back to his pre farm with the mentor Yoda stick time where he was clearing, you know, especially when he said, I don't die. And then he literally rose from the dead.
Basically, not everyone's gotten the memo as to what it's exactly what we're supposed to do. And that's, mm-hmm. I don't know if it's a failure in the leadership or is it a failure in, like, I don't know what the issue is. Or is it because some of the, like, people like Jesus are just going on their own? Because Tara told him, it's like, hey, you're not Rick or Maggie. Basically saying, you can't make these decisions.
Right. And then left it up for them. Because at the end, he's like, well, who said that he would side with him, and then she's like, well, I'll go talk to Rick and we'll see what he thinks. Like, Kuma's like, I'm gonna tell Dad and he'll decide, you know.
Well, yeah, it's like basically telling him that, you know, you're not the leader, you're like, you can't
make these choices
all of a sudden, be
you can't deviate moral. From the plot.
Yeah, so that was an interesting thing that's going to play out obviously in the next few episodes and see how it goes. I think those prisoners are going to be a problem, but we'll see.
Well, you know how The Walking Dead deals with people who are like extras in the show. They always kill them off in the end because you can't have too many characters. So by the end of the season, I expect them all to be dead or gone.
Right. Well, about a bunch of people got shot in this episode from Alexandria. So we don't know if they're going to be alive or not, because they left it kind of open. Yeah, there's another way to get rid of characters is to have a war, right?
There you go. Bada boom, bada bing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not expecting them to stay alive. I'd be surprised if they did.
Yeah. Well, the way so far they've shown the saviors, the way they've scripted the savior characters from the, mm-hmm. from the first moment we saw them till now, they've been bad people. And like, there has never been a good person on the savior side that I've seen, except for Dwight.
Yeah, but he's...
But he had an arc,
he's got
right?
His, yeah, he has an arc, and he has his reasons.
Right.
The other characters don't, because they've never really been developed. But that one guy that Jesus and Tara had their first kind of, like, moral...
Dilemma
with. Did you believe that he was surrendering?
Yeah.
I believed it, too. He peed on himself.
Yeah.
And then you could see how conniving everybody is. I'm like, what? You can't trust anyone.
That's what I'm saying. Every time they've shown a savior, they've always made them evil. Always.
Like,
they've never shown...
poor evil.
Yeah. They've never shown them...
otherwise.
Like, especially when they're interacting with our group, right?
Yeah. They know them all by name. They know who they are, what they've been through. It's like they've all been updated on the status of the group.
Yeah, like even the pee pants guy was like, oh, this is Maggie's medicine. Well, I guess she doesn't have her medicine anymore. Like he knows who Maggie is.
He knows, exactly.
They've never given us a reason to like the saviors. Never given us a reason to doubt.
Nope.
To doubt that, yes, they all should be killed.
The only person they've really filled out was Dwight, but we don't really think of Dwight as part of the saviors anyway, because he was a victim almost in the way.
Mm-hmm.
But
and they had a reason for him to be, he was a character that they wanted to follow his arc, right?
Right. So, and they did describe that. Well, I mean, that's where Jesus comes in. He says, well, some of the saviors don't want to do this. Some of them are forced to be in this group kind of thing, or forced to do what they do.
Basically what I'm saying is, yeah, those people surrendered, but all they're thinking, right? All those surrendered people are thinking right now is how can they escape?
Exactly.
And how can they kill the other people? Like, that's all they're thinking right now in my mind, right?
Right.
So I'm thinking, well, they're just biding their time until they can turn on our group. So
exactly. Yeah. I just think it's stupid to think otherwise, because they go in. Did Rick ever say take prisoners?
He kind of did. That's what I'm saying. It's confusing the way he presented his speech. You have to put the rules down and say, okay, if this person does this, you kill them. If this person does that, you save them. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
He just said, oh, only one person needs to die, and the others who side with. It's kind of flaky. It's like kind of it's. Kind of cloudy.
Yeah,
it's not clear.
Yeah,
you know, you gotta, if people go into battle, you don't give instructions, vague instructions, because that's what gets you killed, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have to be specific, and the instructions weren't specific, and that's why this situation happened, and Jesus took it upon himself to, like, okay, well, I'm going to insert my beliefs, my morals into the situation right now.
And it doesn't look good on this. It doesn't look good for their prisoners, who were like, oh, there's an opening here, because they don't know what they want.
Right. They're not sure.
They're not organized.
So let's take the chance, and maybe they'll shoot us. Maybe they won't. Let's run anyway.
Right. You know? And that's one thing that the saviors got going for them, is they're all synced with each other.
They're all Negan.
There you go. I guess there's some merit to what he's preaching.
Yeah, they're all Negan. I mean, you could see the ruthlessness when Mara was talking to the guy who was cleaning the guns. See how ruthless she was. Like,
they established that from the beginning.
Yeah, there's like there's no talking back. There's, because that's how the saviors work, and we've seen them throughout, right?
And like, there's different rankings too of the saviors.
You do your job, or else you get yelled at, and you get punished or whatever. And she was like clear in that regard.
So yeah, after we get the opening of their faces,
let's talk about the attack on the radio tower base. Now this is a base that they're visiting for the second time,
right?
And there's a lot of throwbacks to the first attack. Like, for example, they have the moat of walkers around. Jesus always has these great lines, but it's like casual. Yeah, well, they have a moat of walkers. I guess that makes sense considering we attacked them once before. And then Morgan's like, I don't care because I wasn't here before, so that means nothing to me.
He didn't have to say that.
Basically is what he said. He's like, well, I wasn't here before, so all this stuff doesn't mean anything. I'm just, I have a job
irrelevant,
to do. I'm here
and
to...
And I need to get the job done before my conscience comes back.
Exactly. And then Diane says, I need a clear shot, and she can't take it. And then so Morgan makes noise so that the walkers can go close to the fence. So then Diane
can take
her shot.
And they're all like, huh? What's going on?
So we see Freddie and Andy, the two sidekicks for Morgan here, and they're like, oh.
I like how you have their names. Like, you know their names.
Freddie. Well, Andy was we knew him. We've seen him before. He was the one guy who, on the first attack, he helped them. Remember?
Right. Yeah.
He told them where to find the place, and he was actually holding the head when he first on the first attack.
Mm-hmm.
So poor guy got killed this time around. But anyway, Freddy and Andy were like, you know, we can back you up. And then Morgan says, I don't die. Now, the analysis of the phrase I don't die is pretty deep, because I think I don't die means that he's kind of cursed not to die.
Right. Because his whole family died, but him, and he had to live through it, and he cleared his whole town.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole history has there.
And plus, so everyone he knows dies. Like the guy who taught him how to fight with a stick, he died. The cheesemaker died. His son. And so I think everybody around him dies except him, especially when he was in the clear mode. So he's kind of cursed to walk the earth and suffer. There was one scene that was kind of strange, where after Morgan makes noise on the fence, he just stares at the walker faces for a very long time. Like the camera stayed there for a while.
Yeah, they've been doing that, haven't they? Been holding the cameras still for a while. Remember the last episode, they had the car blow up explosion.
Mm-hmm.
That was a long shot. That
it means something. It emphasizes something. And the fact that Morgan stared there for a while means that he's kind of absorbed in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So we see them attack the tower. Tara, Morgan, and Jesus are leading the attack. At first I thought, you know, maybe Jesus can't kill people.
Right.
But he can, because he shot, mm-hmm. when they got in there, he actually fired and he shot someone. So we see that Jesus can kill.
Right.
If he has to. And then we see some writing on the wall where it says, Thomas says, kill the bitches.
And there's like blood stains where I guess headshot wounds were.
Possibly, yeah. They could have been headshots. And it shows the character of the saviors, what kind of people they are.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So there was one...
It doesn't help their case at all.
Exactly. There was one... So there was the scene, of course, where they got shot, where Morgan, Freddie, and Andy are standing in front of the door with a bunch of saviors inside.
Yep.
That whole scene was very tense. I mean, Jesus is like holding his hand...
They did it that way on purpose. And he's like looking around like 10 times.
Yeah. I love like Jesus like, yes, now. He pulls his hand down like, let's do this. It was awesome. And then, it was very
methodical.
Very,
yeah.
Very tense, because they were holding him. And one of the guys, I think
was shaking. Freddy. Yeah.
Freddy was shaking.
Because they're not fighters, you know? They're not natural born killers.
So I'm not sure if they're trying to tell us that because Freddy was shaking that they screwed up. But I don't know. It seemed like when the door opened, there was a slight delay when they shot. Like they hesitated a little. I don't know if it was me, but
right.
So maybe that's why they got shot. But I don't know.
Shot down.
I think it was.
But that was so shocking. I was like, oh my gosh, because they like cut straight away to something else.
Yeah, they didn't show them drop, and then we see it later, right?
Mm-hmm.
When Jesus lowers his fist to synchronize that they have to attack, at that moment they cut to the other scene where the Alexandrians are attacking that other outpost.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one example of what I was talking about, where they did the very good editing where...
Right, exactly.
When you think they're going to move on one scene, they actually jump to another and you see them doing the other. It's just kind of cool.
So it's like at the building of the tension and it keeps going and keeps going.
It's as if Jesus was ordering an attack and then the attack was happening somewhere else.
Ooh.
Kind of... Something like that. But I like the way they edited it back and forth.
And I liked all the leaders of these attacks, because you have a connection to everyone. There's like they have a main guy in almost every section, yeah. Or my main girl.
Yeah. So so Morgan, Freddie, and Andy fall down, and we assume they're all dead, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then we go to the scene where Jesus and Tara find the guy in the room. He's mm-hmm. pissed himself.
One other thing I was interested in is like, how they were all together and then they split off and this whole thing happened and not once did what's that woman's name, Diane, ever come in to see if they were okay or to help clear.
Well, that's because she was outside shooting, right? Because Tara opens the door to see what's going on outside, and they show Diane firing down the hallway, and she's like, oh, stay in your room, we'll tell you when it's clear to come out.
Mm.
So they did it very well. They made everything very believable. Like, it looks like this could happen, you know?
Right. Imagine if you're Okay, now imagine if you're in their position. You know, when you go to work and you're doing a lot of stuff, like when I'm going to work, because I'm scooping ice cream right now, so that's like my job. But I can carry a conversation. I can talk to my conversation with my coworkers. I can talk to the customers. I'm scooping gelato. I'm multitasking and like I'm focused and I'm like, okay, ring this up, this and that up. They're like, almost in that way, I kind of like could see that with them with killing people. Diane's like multitasking. She's like taking care. She's like, no, we got this. I'll let you know when it's clear. Just stay there, blah, blah, blah. She's like, killing, taking lives. Okay. She's taking names and she's just like, I thought it was.
I think I like Diane. I mean, she's not very emotional character. Like, she's very bland.
Right.
But so far she's been doing her job and she's very on point. So I like her in that sense. But as far as like a character, she's very flat. not very emotional.
Nah, she doesn't have a very much depth to her.
Yeah.
Well, because we don't have a backstory on her, right. So she's not very colorful yet.
I call her the female Daryl.
Yeah.
Because she has the bow and arrow. I mean, the crossbow.
Uh-huh.
I like how you took like part of your own personal life, like with with the ice cream, and just kind of parallelized it to these people.
That's what we do, Dad, in life. That's how you relate to things.
Yeah.
Scooping gelato is the same as killing people.
Exactly the same. So let's hear some of the Tara and Jesus' conversation.
Right.
I got it, Jesus. Step aside.
Tara.
There's a firefight outside. We don't even know if Morgan's alive.
Please, lady, I am not one of them.
You're here. You had a gun. You are one of them.
I'm not. You gotta believe me.
Then what are you doing here?
I'm just a worker. They brought me from the sanctuary to cook, clean, you know, whatever. They did not give me a choice. They made me leave my wife and kids. Your people can do this at the sanctuary, too. Family's okay.
We don't want to hurt the workers. We're not going to.
You believe him?
It's not about him. I'm not going to shoot someone with their hands up, and I'm not letting you.
These medical supplies. They're the Hilltops, right? Maggie's prenatals? They took them because they could. Because they don't give a shit, so why should we?
I know they killed your girlfriend. Jesus. That you loved her. This isn't you.
It is now.
We're not here for revenge. It can't be about that.
It can.
He's like called her out. He's like, okay, I know your girlfriend died.
And then she's like, Jesus. So basically the raising of the hands is like the signal to, okay, we can't shoot you now. I like Tara though in this episode. She's hardcore.
She's now you get to see the effects of what happened to her.
So you're saying that Tara never started out this way, but now she's become this way?
Well, yeah. Well, I mean, like, we never really got to see her be affected by the death of Denise, but this is where it gets personal now.
Mm-hmm.
She's always seemed very level-headed, considering, but now we get Jesus, like, reveals to us, look, you can't, it's not about you.
Yeah.
Remember? That's, like, something that Gabriel also said, it's not about you. Because once you make it about you, then you become like Rosita.
Yeah, we still don't know. Reckless. We still don't know what Rosita's role.
Well, obviously she wasn't invited to the war, so
she wasn't invited to the party. That's why she's all pissed off, because she wasn't invited to the party.
Yeah, she's like, you're gonna sit out. You've done enough.
Time out. Yeah, I like how Tara's on board, and honestly, I think that's how you should be in this situation. You got to be on board with what the leaders want, right?
Yeah,
and later on they argue about
you have to be a hive mind. You can't be separated.
And later on, Jesus and Tara talk about how I'll tell Rick, right? It's like Maggie versus Rick kind of thing. It's like, that's weird.
Yeah. Because this brings up a new problem in the future. Because what if Maggie does take Jesus' side? And Rick is like, no, man, like, we can't let that happen. But because Rick gave her the power to say, to believe that after this, you're in charge.
Yeah, I'll follow
then it's
you.
It's kind of just like, conflict.
Mm-hmm. Because Rick told her in the previous episode, hey, after all this is over, I'm following you. But is he going to follow her if she's going to be against Rick?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It's like, oh, you decide to take prisoners because Maggie told you to? Or like, you thought Maggie was going to back you up? Like, what?
Like, hello? Who allowed this to happen?
And then I just feel that the whole prisoner thing, the whole prisoner thing is going to go bad, like really bad. That the whole prisoner thing is going to be so bad that it's going to have like real consequences. And of course, there's going to be some finger pointing, like, you know, hey, Jesus did this because of Maggie. I don't know. I feel it's going to go bad.
Oh, I'm just getting so much anxiety. But you know, it's...
Yep.
We need conflict, okay? This war obviously can't be just black and white. There has to be some internal conflict for growth.
He actually goes to shoot Tara, and then Jesus does his karate moves, and he, you know, disarms him and knocks him down. Also, we see that the guy crushes Maggie's vitamins, prenatal vitamins. Did that just like...
For me, it's like there's going to be more prenatal vitamins.
There has to be.
I thought this was just symbolism. I'm like, why are you trying to agitate? This is not going to work. I mean, yeah, it's annoying because it's like, really? But that's not going to make her break the, if she's going to have the baby or not.
So him crushing the vitamins did like kill the baby? It's like, yeah, he's crushing the baby right there.
I always thought it was a bit dramatic at the least, but you know.
First of all, women have babies without vitamins.
Babies for centuries.
without vitamins, okay? So please. Let's be real
and
here.
And it's got other stuff too.
Yeah, let's be real. You don't need prenatal vitamins to have a baby. Yeah, so that was that scene. And then we see the scene where Morgan gets up from the dead. You know, that reminded me, that scene where he gets up, literally, of the movie Terminator.
It does, because the way he came up was so cold and inhuman in a way.
Yeah.
You know, it was very blank. It was very stiff.
He looks around at the carnage and just gets up, loads his gun and runs off. And
I thought it was really heavy that when he wakes up, he looks right into Freddy's eyes and Freddy's still breathing, mm-hmm. and looking at him and this guy, it's like Morgan doesn't even, I thought he was going to put him down, but he didn't. He just left him there.
Yeah. Which is showing how cold.
Yeah. And imagine being that person. And then I got all like deep and like, oh, looking within myself, like, what if I was in that position and I was dying? And then you could see Morgan gets to walk away from this, but you realize I don't. And then your world is over. Like,
yeah, what's going on? Yeah, what's going on through your head, right? As if you were Freddy.
Yeah, because that's what they were trying to do with that not
stare.
Being able to move, you know?
That stare, yeah.
Jeez. I feel like dying would be like, have you ever woken up and you were still asleep? Your body was still asleep, but your mind was still awake. So you couldn't move your body
because
your body was still, I've had that happen once. I felt like I was dead. Cause you feel like you're a spirit in your own mind. Cause the only way you know you're here and you're here in the world is because you can touch the world. You can move, you can do things, but like, especially if you just wake up and you can't do anything, you're like, oh my God, I'm dead.
We see Morgan going through some psychological problems in that he sees
he's
in
having
his,
an episode
in his mind. He's reliving a scene where he's talking to Rick, and it was way back in the early couple of seasons ago where they were in a church talking, and Rick says, Morgan says to Rick, are you sure we can beat them? And Rick says, yeah, I'm sure. And then basically they were arguing because Morgan was in favor of not killing them.
Right.
And Rick was like, no, we got to clear them all and get them, kill every one of them, right? And I think he was reliving this because he was having that conflict in his head again, perhaps, of whether he should kill or not. Is that?
Go ahead.
I was wondering, maybe the reason why he was thinking that is because as he was killing, you know, he was going through the mechanics of killing, but his mind was telling him no or something. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
He had a conflict, basically.
Well, it's this change because he technically almost died and now he's in survival mode, but he was already going into it.
Yeah, he was already in that mode.
Right, right. So I don't know why he was getting these flashbacks. I guess because now that he's in the moment, his conscience is trying to bring him back.
Well, I think whenever Morgan is in clear mode, he's in that mode, but he's always like he's a little crazy when he's in that mode.
Yeah. I mean, look at the way he went. He was like the Terminator. One shot, pop, 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 down, down, down. It's just like, yeah, dude, is that real? Can that happen?
Well, there's no doubt. There's no question of what he needs to do. We have to kill. Even the one guy who, they show one guy, he runs through a door, close it behind him, and he's running away. So the guy's like running away from him, escaping. So in theory, he's kind of quote unquote surrendering. Not really, but he's like running away. You know, when someone's running away, you don't kill him. You know,
you don't shoot him in the back. That's like...
Exactly. But he did it anyway because he basically turned on that switch that says, okay, we have to kill everyone. That's right. That's our orders.
Right.
And that's what he did.
I can't lie and say I was like really excited when this was happening. I'm like, yes, get the job done. But, and I can understand why it's so good. And then I was frustrated because it's like, oh, Jesus is keeping everybody alive. Now Morgul's going to have this emotional battle with, did I do the right thing? And, but I get it. Yeah. I get it from both points of view because it's true. You don't want to kill everyone because then what does that make you? Makes you just as bad. But how are we going to feed all these people?
Well,
and they're going to escape.
They can create their own community with these people, absorb them in, you know?
Yeah. Give them a choice.
And in retrospect, that's kind of what Rick wanted to do in the first episode. And that's the reason why he didn't kill everyone that was standing in next to Negan, is because he wants the leaders of Negan's group. He wants to kill Negan, of course, but he wants the leaders of Negan's group to be alive so that they can lead their people to join their group. You know what I'm saying? Just like Ezekiel and his group joined and the Hilltop and all that. He potentially, I think, wants Negan's group, the good people that are left over from Negan's group, to join their group as a productive member of the community.
Because he's realizing that they need the numbers.
Without having the evil of Negan, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think that's what his goal was, and that's why they didn't straight up go into the Savior compound and murder everyone, because they wanted the leaders to stay alive and stuff. So, I don't know. I think that's what's going on. But was really visually important in this upcoming scene was where Morgan, after he kills all those people, opens a door into the light.
Mm-hmm.
He opens the door in the light.
It's like he's blinded.
It kind of
blinded by the light.
It wakes him up, right?
Mm-hmm. It kind of pulls him back.
And it's a flashback to episode one of the first season where Rick comes out of the hospital, opens the door, and all this light shines in. Kind of wakes him up. But anyway, in this case, for Morgan, it was kind of a wake up, like, okay, snap out of it.
Come back to reality. Yeah.
Snap out of it. And it kind of.
But he still was like, saw all these targets, like the Terminator, like, you know, when they go into his vision and it's like, target, 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 target. So he was still confused as to why all these people were here. Yeah.
Are you Sarah Connor? Are you Sarah Connor? Multiple Sarah Connors. Yeah, and the number one target that he wanted to kill was that guy. What was his name again? I forgot his name.
Oh yeah. You have him here as Jared.
Oh, Jared, yeah.
Who killed
Benjamin.
Oh, I forgot about that kid, dude.
How could you forget? He's wearing Benjamin's armor.
Oh yeah.
And that could be why he got saved, because the bullet ricocheted off his armor. Who knows?
Oh, wow.
I'm just saying.
Funny how that works.
But
Morgan, he's like, we're supposed to kill them. And Jesus is like, it's not what we do.
And then Morgan says, what do we do, huh?
And that's where they're like, well, I guess we'll leave it to Maggie and Rick.
Like, are we killers or aren't we? Like, let's make up our mind. Are we these people that kill? Or are we not?
Exactly.
I don't know. With this, yeah. They do it on purpose, man. They want us to fight with each other in our heads. Like, we got to kill. No, we don't kill. They do it on purpose to mess us up.
Yeah, to create conflict and split the audience. What did mom think? Did she want them to all die?
I don't know. She didn't say it, but she was freaking out. This whole show is stressful, man. One thing that Jared said, which I didn't understand, he looks at Morgan and he says, oh, did you get transferred too? I'm like, what?
I didn't get that.
What is that, a joke, or like, was he serious?
Oh, was he like transferred because he went from Ezekiel's castle to Hilltop because he saw Jesus?
Maybe that's what they're saying.
Because maybe that guy Jared was like in a different division and they got transferred for the war. I don't
know. Jared got transferred because he was bad, right?
Oh, he screwed up, and so he said, "Oh, did you get transferred too?" Like, not even acknowledging the fact that. This guy's trying to kill him because he killed his friend. He's like, oh, you got in trouble too? Yeah.
This Jared guy, man. He has no
concept of like what's good and bad anymore. Like, what really matters? Like, does it, what?
Not being aware of that. Morgan is holding back, yo. He could kill you right then on the spot. Come on, man.
He killed all your friends, bro.
He's holding back. Don't you know?
Gosh. I didn't understand what that meant until now.
Yeah, like we're like compadres here.
So if we move to the next...
The Alexandria crew attack the expansion outpost. So that was an outpost that's part of the expansion plan. I don't know what happened there.
But all of this information was given to them through Dwight, correct?
Mm-hmm. There's two things that happen here. There's the attack, and then also the Rick and Daryl part, which is in the same area, but like another part of the building.
Mm-hmm.
So they went together. So this attack was pretty straightforward in that they go to attack, and their goal was basically to kill enough of them that they would turn into walkers, and then the walkers
right,
would...
Right, but this scene made me nervous just because I love Eric and Aaron, and I could tell they were just... Because they're like, they're together, they're a team, but they're like separated, and he's always watching... Aaron's always watching to see if Eric's okay. Mm-hmm. And I think that's like a terrible idea to put your family together in war because you're distracted from the reality of the situation.
But I think in reality, that's the only way Aaron would let Eric fight is if he was with him.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's like, true.
I'm not, you got to be in the same team because I got to keep an eye on you or else, you know, you're staying home.
This is why you just can't just be single in the apocalypse.
Weren't you kind of expecting Eric to get killed? Like
I thought he was supposed to die like seasons ago, to be honest. When he first broke his leg, I'm like, he's going to die. He's going to eat it. Because he doesn't seem like a very strong character, and Eric's only character development is his relation to Aaron. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have anything else about Eric except that he loves Aaron.
Yeah.
So I was just expecting him to eat it. Yeah, see, you have here, Eric kills one guy, and Aaron looks over approvingly and smiles.
Well, yeah, I could see that. It's like, it felt like Aaron was saying...
He's like proud.
Yeah, look at it. Oh, right, Eric is fighting. Because, you know, we know from the story that Aaron has always been the one that went into the forest, has always gone out on runs.
All right.
And Eric's always been the one that stayed home and took care of the cooking and stuff. You know?
In a way, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, he did, really. I mean, Eric was really sheltered, right?
Right.
And then Aaron, because when Eric was saying, you know, I want to come or I want to do this. And Aaron's like, no, you stay here. I don't want you involved. Always, right? He was always protecting him.
Right.
And now because they need the numbers, you know, this Eric's like, no, I need to do this. So they say, okay, fine. And then Aaron's like, hey, Eric's doing really well. He's killing some people. He's taking human lives.
he's taking initiative by taking lives. Yeah. And then like Eric even went the next step and was on his own. And then that's how it got into trouble.
Something with Eric and Tobin where Tobin's like, wait till I come over there. And Eric's like, no, there's no time. I got to do this. I got to go solo. And then so mm-hmm. Eric goes out there and starts doing his thing. And then I think that's when he got shot, when he went out in the open and started shooting. And then,
yeah, because I was like, oh, Aaron's going to get there in time. And then like, you think, I hate when they do this in movies and TV shows. Like, yeah, I'm good. And they have like a giant freaking hole in their stomach. It was funny because I saw a play at my school yesterday or on Friday, and there was a scene where the two characters went off and you thought, and they were fighting. They were like, he came at her with a hammer. She had a gun, but it was, everything happened off stage. So when they heard the gunshot, we're like, oh, who died? We're assuming she got the guy because she had the gun and he had the hammer, but then he's the one that comes out. And then he asks one of the characters, so how do you get out bloodstains again? Because that was the running gag. Like he was a killer, so he needed to know how to get bloodstains out of stuff. He's like, what if it was a cotton blend with a silk shirt? And she's like, I don't know, bleach? And he's like, huh, bleach, huh? And he opens up his shirt and he's a giant wound. This whole time you thought like he killed someone else, but he actually dies and then he just falls over. Because is that how the real reaction is when someone dies?
Well, possibly, because what happens is when you're like in that situation where they're in, your adrenaline is running really high. So when you get hurt, you don't feel it right away until you're like calm a little bit, and then you feel it, then you notice it, right?
I hear that, like, once you look at it, that's when you realize, oh crap. Because then that's when your brain recognizes, oh my God, because they see the, what, yeah. Right. And
because your mind is focused on survival mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I hear. And then, so you don't see it right away. But I like that there was like no blood. And then he's like, then when Aaron puts his hand in, a gush of blood just starts shooting out. He's like, okay.
And action.
It's like, okay. I mean, that's a shot to the gut. Do you think he's going to survive that?
Dad, it's a TV show.
Well,
if he was supposed to die, he would have died in that episode.
Oh, remember Ezekiel said in the first episode, hey, we have a good doctor at the place. Remember, because he was talking to Maggie and Maggie's like, oh, we lost our doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And then Jesus is like, oh, we're going to get the doctor back.
Right.
And then Ezekiel says, well, we got a good doctor back at the kingdom. So I'm just saying that there's doctors around. Around. So,
and everybody should know the basic first aid skills. Well, so,
yeah.
Like a tourniquet and like covering.
I don't know if you can help that one, because a shot to the gut.
You got to get the bullet out.
A shot to the gut's pretty devastating because it destroys like your stomach and your lungs and potentially, who knows.
Dude, if I got shot, there would be a hole in my body. I'm so small. Like the bullet will, like the wound will take up my ribs, my lungs, everything that's in the vicinity.
Yeah, you'd be like,
actually, it might miss me just because I'm so small.
Yeah.
It's just graze.
You just like.
I just like shimmy.
Right. You know? So Mara gets eaten from a walker, which
she's like, they didn't have to move on us. Ah! And then she gets attacked on cue.
Kind of in a slow motion kind of way. She wasn't fighting too much, but whatever.
She was in shock, I think.
It's almost like she started breaking down and crying, like, oh my God, I didn't realize the plan.
Because she's so hard. She's like, oh, they're too like chicken to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm. So we can beat them.
Right.
And
then one of the main girls, Francine, I guess, is shot in the chest. I didn't feel anything about it, but I didn't even know her name was Francine until now. That's how I feel about that. And
well, because Eric yells out her name, Francine. So now you know her name is Francine. But
yeah,
she was one of those people that were in the background and you saw her every now and then.
You knew she was kind of important, but not important enough. Honestly, if they don't get a backstory, I don't care. If they don't have a backstory, it's a note to me that they're not that important.
And Aaron runs over a couple of saviors with his car.
Nice.
That was a good moment there. Mm-hmm. And then Eric is shot.
Eric gets, and so, that's the face scene that we see at the beginning and at the end.
Yeah, so Aaron is struggling at the end to come to terms with Eric being shot.
Mm-hmm.
I think Tobin got shot in the shoulder too, but of course a shoulder wound we know is nothing.
Right.
So Tobin's good. And then we have Carol
and Ezekiel. And they're, Ezekiel. I thought it was very spiritual because Ezekiel did a lot of talking about, you know, there's no certainty in the future. We just got to keep going and hope for the best and Shakespeare and blah, 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 blah. And Carol's just like, do you think Carol likes Ezekiel? Or Ezekiel likes Carol in like a more than a friend way.
I think Carol likes Ezekiel. I don't think she likes him in a love kind of way. It doesn't seem to me, but I know Ezekiel likes her.
Yeah, I know that much. But, yeah, you know, so after the smoke starts clearing from the explosion, it's so funny because Ezekiel is not a very good actor in my opinion, because I think he overacts everything. So when he's coming out of the smoke, he's like, oh, what? Huh? And I just thought it was really funny. And
first of all, that whole scene was kind of bogus to me because it was supposed to be an explosion that knocks them out, but it made so much smoke that they couldn't see each other. I don't know what kind of explosion does that. Like unless it's a smoke bomb,
mm-hmm.
to cause smoke on purpose, like a typical grenade, like it'll have an explosion, but it won't make that much smoke where you can't see each other. Maybe I'm wrong because I wasn't in the army, so I wasn't in battle, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was just more for dramatic effect.
Yeah, and then the bunch of walkers that were in the medical clinic come out. Some of them had bandages on their head and stuff.
Mm-hmm. You said one of them looks like the governor?
Well, because he had a bandage across his eyes, just like the governor had a bandage at one point.
Dad, multiple people can have eye wounds, okay?
Yeah, I'm just saying.
It wasn't. Just got thrown out there.
It obviously wasn't the governor, but it looked like him.
Oh yeah, Jerry yells, "Protect the king!" And Ezekiel's like, "Protect yourselves."
I like Jerry.
He's cool. He's like the comic relief.
Yeah. What? Well, how would you feel if Jerry dies?
I still want to care because he doesn't have a backstory.
It would be sad.
Yeah.
Because he's.
It'd be like the cool puppy dying on a superhero team. You know, like the mascot dying, you know? Yeah, so the guy who went missing was the guy who threw the grenade. And so then their like whole mission was like, we got to track down the last man.
Yeah, because
you don't want him to get out to the compound.
So the whole plan was that they kill this lookout and then they head towards the other compound. We don't know. We haven't seen this other compound yet. Apparently they're heading towards another savior compound, which we haven't seen yet. The main kingdom group is on their way there, but this small group with Carol and Ezekiel went sideways just to kill the scout, so mm-hmm. the scout wouldn't give him the heads up. So that's why it's important to kill them. But they didn't realize that the scout had a walkie-talkie, and that, you know, the whole thing was pointless because eventually the scout actually told them. That's what the whole thing was, them walking through the forest and then eventually meeting up with this larger group, is that was the... After they meet up, they're going to head to their ultimate destination, which is to attack this other outpost, which is going to be another huge battle, which mm-hmm. I can't wait to see.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm curious to see what tactics this group uses, because they don't have as much... I mean, they have guns, but they also have like swords and sticks and stuff because of the way the kingdom fights. So it'll be interesting to see how this battle goes
out. It's medieval war.
Yeah.
Or they try to make it a medieval war.
And then, so Carol and Ezekiel have a talk, and Carol is worried about the future. Let's see what she says here.
What's about to happen? It's not just a few walkers. You know that, right?
Yes. And yet I smile.
Why?
Do I feel this supreme confidence? Or is my lot, my job, to simply project such... certainty. No. And yes. Yes and no. And then finally yes to both. Fake it till you make it, baby. That's what I've done and what I do. I am king because I have provided a light to lead my people forward through the darkness, and they have made my fictions realities. So with all this and everything that's happened,
all of us may not make it. We may not even win.
And yet I smile. There will be no fantasies of failure this day.
Fake it till you make it, baby. You're like a broke character there.
That was the kind of the subtext of the whole thing. This whole paragraph of speech just to summarize in one little phrase. Fake it till
right,
you make it.
Exactly. He could have just said that. But I get it. I get it. He's got to keep up the act.
Yeah. So I think deep down he is kind of scared of the outcome, but he's in it. He's in it for the long, like he's in it right now, and he there's no way out, right? Like this is your lot in your life. This is your future. This is what you got to do right now at this moment. And he's going to go through with it. So
I appreciate that. I like their duo because Carol is such a negative person right now. And in this part of her life,
so she's cynical.
She's very cynical. And we have Ezekiel here who's like, I just breathe positivity because I know my people will make it true. It's just true. Like if you see a future that you want, you go where you look.
That's what I'm telling you, Jasmine. That's what you got to do in life.
Speaking about life lessons, I recently bought a book, an actual book with words, paper, things, smells like trees.
Why?
Called I'm Fine and Other Lies by Whitney Cummings. This is not a sponsored ad. I'm just advertising this because Whitney Cummings is a comedian, a stand-up comedian, and she wrote a book talking about not her life, but basically all the mistakes she's made in the past and how what she's learned from them. And she's taken a lot of therapy classes, which involves like how to get over having all this anxiety, pleasing other people, and dating people that aren't healthy for you because
sound familiar?
What? So obviously, because I saw her stand up, I really liked what she said. She's a very powerful woman right now. She's producing TV shows. She's has her own stand-up. She's her own show on HBO. And she's like different. She has her hands in different parts of the entertainment industry, and she's grown, and she's in her 30s, and she's like really wealthy. So I'm like, huh, maybe I should learn a thing or two from her, because some of her comedy kind of relates to me, and because she talks a lot about her early 20s. And this book is really cool because she has so many stories of how many times she's screwed up, and like I'm like, I can learn from this.
Have you started?
I don't have to go through this. I'm like halfway through, and I haven't read a book this fast since Twilight. So this is a good sign.
Well, I'm glad to see that you're reading nonfiction books,
mm-hmm.
because that's one of the transitions you make as you grow up to be an adult, Jasmine.
Oh, well, here we go.
Is you start reading nonfiction and you start reading like books that, you know, talk about life and, you know, other people's experiences. And I think that's a good sign. I'm glad to see that.
Thanks, Dad. Well, I can't find these inspiring and titillating conversations with people in my life. So I said, well, why don't I just get a book and have a conversation with them? And it's true. I've actually written notes. She has like interactive, not interactive. It's not like it's like a coloring book or whatever. She just like gives like tips and suggestions from like, she went to therapists. She went to like psychics and all that stuff. And I'm like, and it also gives me stuff to talk about at work. Cause at work is boring. Okay. I scoop in gelato in October or now November. There's no one's going to come to work. And, so it's nice to be able to have this kind of, I feel like I'm still learning something.
Well, at least the good thing about ice cream in California is that it's, the weather is somehow some a little bit ice cream worthy. I don't know.
Right. In Germany, they close the ice cream shop 5 months of the year because Germany is cold as heck in the winter.
Nobody buys ice cream in the cold. That's interesting.
Well, think about it, Dad.
You should switch it to like hot chocolate making or something. Or
we
coffee.
Do now. We make hot chocolate.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool about the book. Yeah.
I really like it. And I've been telling everybody to go read it and, et cetera, et cetera. There's stories in there. She tells about her life, relating to dating. And then she goes back and it makes me want to write my own book as well. Cause she goes back and talks about, here's why I did this thing. And here's what I learned. Like she was almost got arrested in Guatemala because her boyfriend at the time was possessing cocaine and he was French, so she couldn't really understand what he was saying. She's like, I met this guy on the plane, but he was sleeping most of the airplane ride. So I projected a personality that I wanted this French guy to have. And when he didn't have it, it didn't matter because he was interested in me. And that's enough for me to give away a year of my life. So I was like, huh, interesting.
Sound familiar?
Shut up. Right? That's what I'm like, I look into myself. I'm like, wow, it could be worse.
Well, that's why I tell you, write a diary, keep a diary of your life.
Yes, I know.
All the things that are currently happening, because years from now, you'll look back and it'll be valuable, you know?
Yeah, and I might be able to write a book.
Maybe. Or at least reflect on who you were, at least how much you've grown.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry for the side note, but there's a great book. If you want to pick it up, I suggest. And if you want to give this book to your daughters,
what was it called
they
again?
They will love it. It's called I'm Fine and Other Lies by Whitney Cummings.
Mm. Well, is Carol and Ezekiel fine? I don't know. Talk about their lives. I don't know. I'm just trying to segue back into the show here. And Ezekiel says, we move forward as we move the very world forward. Very, very bold statement.
Yeah. Think about it. If this works for them, they'll have this world that's been created and paved by them, you know?
Mm-hmm. And hopefully it'll end up in as that dream sequence that Rick had in episode one.
Mm-hmm.
If it is a dream sequence, maybe it's the actual future. We don't know. So they catch up with the runaway. Ezekiel holds off Carol and say, hold your horses. Don't worry. Shiva's got this. And then Shiva jumps up and eats the bad guy. I got to say that they really did a great job with the CGI on Shiva.
Yeah.
They did a great job.
It does look impressive.
As opposed to some other fails that they had
in, right.
throughout the show. But this, they did a good job on this one.
I think they worked really hard on this one because it's hard to make a good CGI tiger with all that hair.
Yeah. And at the end, you know, Jerry shows the walkie-talkie and say, hey, it's the jig is up. They already know we're coming. And Ezekiel says, well, we'll have to go through anyway because our audience expects a battle, so we got to show them one. we can't just go back and give up now.
And I'm glad you took a screenshot of the map.
The note.
The note that Rick had in his hand. Out of all the nice long shots they like to do of non-essential things, the things that matter, they just flip right on by. But yeah, we go back to Rick and Daryl, and they're on their own, like, solo head honcho mission where they're actually at... Are they at...
They're at the same place where the Alexandrians are attacking.
Right. And they're trying to find weapons.
They're trying to find weapons that Dwight told them about. And I think these the notes that Rick is going through are the notes that Dwight made.
Right. Because they've been communicating through bow and arrow. Crossbow.
Yeah.
Through arrow notes.
Yeah, they were wrapped up in the little thing. And yeah, those are the same.
Did Daryl have to fire that bow into the Dwight's tire, though?
He did it on purpose.
That's a dick move.
Because he doesn't like him. He doesn't like Dwight. He doesn't like him. I mean, later on in this scene, Rick says, last floor, the guns should be here. Everything else he passed you is checking out. And then Daryl says, that guy's a piece of shit.
Straight up.
He doesn't like him at all. Rick says, okay, well, we got to get the guns because if the guns get to the sanctuary somehow, I don't know how they're going to get to the sanctuary, but if they do, then the saviors could use them to kill the walkers and escape, right?
Exactly, yeah.
So that's why they got to get the guns. But they got to get the guns because guns are good to have. It's a good thing to have in a war.
And they need more. Yeah, you could always do with more.
One thing I didn't thought was kind of hokey in this scene was they take out the two guards with headshots.
Mm-hmm.
And the two guards they're standing in front of a door that has a glass behind them. And apparently the bullet goes through the head, but it doesn't go through and break the glass. The bullet gets stuck in the head.
I guess it depends on how far they are, what gun they're using. But it makes it look like a cool, it has a cool effect.
Yeah, you see the gun splatter, but you'd think that the glass would break too. I don't know, it would have been more impressive if the glass would break. I would like it better. It'd be cooler. Now, you mentioned the note. The note on it says, heavy guns, 50 cal, Browning. Now, that's a huge gun. I mean, it's like he said, it's a heavy gun. It's basically a heavy machine gun with large bullets. And if those do actually exist somewhere, they don't show that they found them. But if they do exist, that's a game changer.
That is a game changer. That's like in Game of Thrones where they had that that giant, giant crossbow that kills dragons.
Okay. but they could mount those in certain places and just mow down like a bunch of saviors or whatever.
Right.
So they could really use those. And also in the note, it says, it's hard to make out, but it says there's roof access. There's access from elevator shaft or stairs. And we see in this scene that they actually do use the elevator shaft to get up to the top.
Which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And they call it an expansion outpost, and it's underlined expansion outpost. And they say trainees. Trainees. So it could be like a place where they're getting
new
saviors. And one scene where Rick and Daryl get split off, Daryl goes into this one dark area and he finds a room with handcuffs hanging and like a plate of food and stuff.
Yeah. And I watched the background videos and Daryl kind of thinks about all the other people that were prisoners like him.
Yeah.
And how many other people this is happening to. For a second, I'm like, oh, is this where Sasha was? But I don't think it was.
But the fact that they call it trainees on the note means that they were recruiting and training new saviors. And basically that torture room was part of the training.
Kind of like the breaking.
Yeah, breaking them down.
Mm-hmm.
Also, there's a little bit of Easter egg in there. Did you notice the handcuffs that were hanging?
Yeah. Is that like reminiscent of Merle?
Yeah. Merle's handcuff hanging on the roof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was kind of a throwback to that. It was an Easter egg. also, we see a scene. I like this scene, this camera shot, which is kind of cool, with Rick walking down the hallway in the dark with the light behind him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was kind of cool. Walking alone down the long, dark hallway, looking around.
Thanks for describing the scene exactly.
It wasn't exactly like this, but it kind of reminded me of when he was in the hospital, waking up, walking down the hallway, trying to find out where to go and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It wasn't exactly the same, but it reminded me of that. And then, of course, we have the scene where he fights with a guy who comes out of nowhere and attacks him.
I think Rick gets the best fight scenes ever. Like, if you look at all the fight scenes with other characters, none of them is as tension inducing and stress inducing and as well choreographed than Rick's fight scenes. And it also is because Rick is such a great actor and he gives his all into his acting. I don't know if you've seen the behind the scenes of like Rick and Daryl making fun of each other, or like Norman and Andrew making fun of each other. Daryl is making fun of Andrew's process.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because he's a very intense actor, and so I could see it in this fight, literally hanging by a thread. Like every last bit of his energy was put into this fight, and I thought he was guarding the weapons, just like everyone, like he thought.
Yeah.
And how brutal the brutal that fight was, the more pain we felt, his pain, when we realized what he was fighting for.
Yeah. That scene at the end was kind of the clincher of the whole episode, I think, because mm-hmm. it basically, going back to, you know, who do we kill and who do we don't kill, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Rick's like, well, we kill this guy because we have to. And he kills him, and he realizes that he has done something horrible because he just orphaned a little baby.
Yeah, changed this girl's future. And I also thought he saw himself.
Yeah. Well,
what if that was him and he was fighting for that is what he's doing right now.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that he won and the other guy lost.
Two people fighting for what they believe in, but one of them has to lose. And who is right and who's wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Questions. But I like the way, some great acting here. Let's see. I mean,
you know noise he makes when he looks into the
right. So Rick opens the door. Rick opens the door and sees a baby. He gets distressed and catches himself in the mirror, and then seems disgusted and looks away. I think that's what happened. Where he's like, "Oh, what did I do? What is this? What's going on?" And then he looks in the mirror, and he doesn't like what he sees, kind of thing, you know. And he kind of looks away, and then he just like turns around.
Yeah, it's like the complete inner monologue was right there in that mirror.
Yeah.
The immediate reaction consequence to his actions. Like, he could see the man he is. You know, it's like, wow, this is what I've become, you know? And her name was Gracie. And then on his, did you notice his tattoo was by the grace of God?
Yeah.
And he named his daughter Gracie.
Yes, sad.
Yay, 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 yay.
But he was a savior, so he had to die.
Yeah, saviors can have kids too.
Really? So Rick sees a photo of Morales and his wife, and he says, "Oh, I know this person. Your name is Morales. You were in Atlanta." And then Morales says,
"That's just to fill people in."
And then Morales says, "That's a long time ago." And by that sentence, you know exactly where Morales' loyalties lie, right? It's like, yeah,
you can see it in his face, dude. He's just like, "I know you." He's known of Rick for a while.
Mm-hmm. "It's over, Rick. I called the saviors back and they're coming." So I don't know exactly what that means. Where did the saviors gone? I don't know. So we'll see how that plays out. But don't forget, Daryl's still around, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he could jump in and save at the last minute if he wants to, if the writers want to.
He didn't even catch Rick at a good time, though. He just killed the father of a little baby.
Yeah, so Rick is kind of stunned.
Yeah. I mean, I had the same reaction that Rick did. I'm like, slowly like recognizing who this is, and we were like, I wonder if we're ever gonna see this guy again. I didn't know this is like a long time coming.
I don't know if it needed to happen. Like, why did they bring him back? Why? There's so many questions. Like, how is this play into the storyline? Is this is this just fan service? Like, hey, let's bring Morales back so all the fans can say, hey, Morales is back.
Is it in the comics? I don't know. I mean, I don't
no,
think
it's not in the comics. But
I don't think people are going to bring it back for the fans, because I don't think anyone gives a crap about Morales.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
They're just making him.
Yeah, but I mean, Morales left in the first season before they went to the CDC. he was basically part of the group, and Rick says,
yeah,
okay,
pre-CDC.
Yeah, we're going to the CDC, and Morales says, no, I'm taking my family somewhere else. Going to go with my people. And then Rick gave him a handgun and a bunch of bullets, and then...
Yeah, but again, they didn't want to... He didn't want to be a part of Rick's group anyway.
Yeah. So the only malice that Morales can have for Rick is because he knows of Rick attacking the Saviors, right? Mm-hmm. He knows Rick's history of attacking the Saviors. That's the only thing he could possibly be mad about, right?
Right.
He can't be mad about Rick season one. Impossible. Like, really? Why would you be mad about Rick at that point? Rick, like, helped you guys. He saved them, right?
Yeah, but he was a completely different person back then, too, though. He was still wearing a cowboy hat and his uniform.
Right. So, you know, Morales can't be mad about that. He must be mad about the current events his new loyalties to Negan, right? Because he is Negan now. The writers must have a point of putting Morales in there.
Dad, of course. They don't put anything just because for fun.
Well, I think it's somehow to affect Rick emotionally. Like, oh, this is one guy from the original group,
mm-hmm.
and from my past, right? Bringing him to the present. How do I deal with it? Basically,
mm-hmm.
So okay. So that was the whole show, and then we see the close up of the faces. I'm excited to talk about this Easter egg, this theory that has been going on the internet, and it has nothing to do with the predictions or comics, but
okay.
Basically, so when Rick sees the baby in the corner of the crib, there's a stuffed bunny. Okay, you with me so far?
Yes, I'm listening.
You understand what a stuffed bunny is? Okay.
Yes. No. Can you elaborate, please?
Now, in the first episode, when they show the flash forward, we don't know if it's a dream sequence or it's just a flash forward. We see Judith holding a stuffed bunny that looks exactly like that stuffed bunny. As she's running out to meet Rick.
Ah.
Okay, so here's where, you know, your mind is going to be blown right now.
Oh my God.
What does that mean? Why is the stuffed bunny there? Is it the same stuffed bunny that Rick saw in that crib? And if it's the same one, does that mean that Judith is dead and the girl is actually the baby in the crib?
What?
Does it mean that, you know, Rick took that baby and actually brought
took it as his own
and brought it up. And that's the that's the girl we see in that flash forward scene. And it's actually not Judith grown up.
What?
And Judith is actually dead.
But the baby looks like Judith. But the girl looks like Judith.
Well, we don't know. We think we were projecting, right? We think that's the Judith.
Well, that is insane.
There is no 100% conclusion on this. Because, I mean, it could be that, yes, Rick did raise that baby and that is that girl, but Judith is still alive and she's just in another room somewhere, right? They just, yeah, it's right. Possible that they
did
both...
Did they ever call her Judith?
No, because...
I mean, it's a little far-fetched, but I can see it.
Like, why would they have a stuffed animal in the crib? And then
maybe he took it as a way to remind himself to be better? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it could be that Rick took it and then... It just exists in the future somehow, and that baby is somewhere else, is being taken care of by someone else. There's no 100% connecting the dots. It's just a theory, right?
Right.
So anyway, that's the theory. So it was brought up on YouTube by a Walking Dead fan.
Jeez, I don't know. I think it's possible, but then that's like an elaborate scheme that's like so far-fetched. But I want to believe it. I don't want to believe it because then that means Judith is dead.
Well, maybe Judith is alive. But anyway, that somehow Rick takes care of that baby. So we don't know if that's a dream sequence or an actual future, right? So mm-hmm. if it's an actual future, then yeah, that's a possibility. But if it's just a made up future dream scene, then, you know, they did it. They filmed that scene with a kind of fuzziness to indicate that it's not a real future. It's a possible future,
mm-hmm.
you know, so there's no guarantees there. They're really trying to mess with us in this season.
Yeah.
And I think they put the bunny in there because they knew people would scrutinize the scenes.
They're like, what does this mean? What does this mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we have
that's a good theory. I agree.
So we have a voicemail from KJ. So I'm going to play that right now.
I'm glad I waited until the second episode to call because that first one was it's rough. Of course, we had to deal with seeing Eric spend his entire episode essentially about to get shot. I was just waiting for him to get shot. I've been waiting for Eric to get shot since the first time he steps on the screen. But, you know, Aaron's boyfriend is short for this world. And but, you know, every episode we got to deal with a little bit of cheesiness, and I just had to get used to that. But I digress. I went to Walker Stalker Con this weekend, had a great time. I'm a super fan, so let's get to the stuff I did love. Rick doing hand-to-hand combat, I can watch that all day. And I knew that spike was coming, so I was at the edge of my seat. And I can watch Carol make faces at Ezekiel all day. I'm just glad to see that, you know, Morgan is back in clear mode, and I'm glad to see Tara. Like, I'm actually on Team Tara this season. It's pretty incredible that her performance is believable, and she really keeps it real. I'm loving that. So the question is, really, I'm wondering if they're going to keep the pace up. Because, you know, we've seen other seasons where they have, like, the first two episodes be really crazy and really action-packed. But are we due for, like, a two-and-a-half-episode Negan subplot, like, bottle episode? I don't know. Let me know what you guys think. I'll talk to you guys later. All right. Bye.
Well, I think they will keep the action up.
And they're just in, yeah, the episode about a Negan backstory, is that what he's mentioning?
Yeah, possibly. They might slow it down with some backstory episode. I don't know. But I think for the next, I would say for the next two episodes, I think they're going to keep the action going.
Mm-hmm. I think so as well. I mean, there's still so much more to be told and character developments. And I really want to know what happens with Maggie and Rick and if they're going to compete with the Tara and like, Jesus, like, nah, but mommy said, daddy said, that's what it kind of seems like.
Yeah. So thanks KJ for that voicemail. And KJ is in Atlanta. He's a listener of the show, and he also, as he mentioned, went to Walker Stalker Con, which we couldn't make it this year. We've been to Walker Stalker twice. Yeah, year one and year two.
Was it the first one? Yeah, first second one.
It's going on for 5 years now. It's the fifth year this year.
Oh wow! Maybe we should go next year.
Maybe we should, Jasmine. Save your money. Save your pennies.
Maybe we should save my pennies.
So finally, I think I want to go over an article that Juan Gabriel Pareja, who plays Morales, he did an interview on Entertainment Weekly about his character and his coming back. He says, well, before you got this call, had you made up your own story in your head for what happened to Morales? And he says, I had always assumed that Morales was surviving out there and making it work. Always hoping for the best, definitely being a survivor. I think we saw that streak in him in the first season. Other than that, man, I just figured he was out there surviving and doing probably some really nasty things in order to survive. I'm kind of naive and optimistic that he was still being a family man and taking care of his family and surviving out there in the awful world of The Walking Dead. And the interviewer says, I know you can't say much, but what can you tease as far as what we'll learn about Morales moving forward? And he says, I can't say too much, but we'll definitely learn a little bit of a backstory for Morales and what's been going on with him over the years and a little bit of what led to his transformation and transition into one of Negan's men as a savior. So we'll probably find out a little bit about Morales and what he's been up to. And basically, the rest of the interview talks about how they were talking to him almost a year ago about potentially coming back, and he was kind of on hold. And then they just brought him in, and he just jumped right into the role. There's not like, yeah, as he says in the interview, there's not much you can prepare for when you've been gone for 7 years, because essentially it's a kind of a completely different character, right? It's not the same.
I mean, yeah, you could take it any way you want as long as you got like a little bit of the history.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the same Morales that we knew from season one. And frankly, he wasn't fleshed out a lot in that season. We knew he was a family man. He had his convictions and stuff, I guess. But he didn't. He wasn't fleshed out like some of the other characters on season one. So we didn't know much about him. And now the only thing that makes him important in the current season is that he was a face that the old Rick knew. So this is like someone from old Rick, right?
You could almost see the time on Morales' face. I mean, it has been years, but you can almost see that they're both just as rugged. Like if you go back to season one, and you see their faces, they're all like soft newborns. Yeah, soft. The McDonald's has made them soft. Now they're eating rabbits.
But I think the actor who plays Morales also over the years personally has been working out and being physically fit, because he posted some stuff on Instagram. I mean, sorry, on Twitter, of him in the gym working out and stuff, saying, hey, I'm getting ready for who knows what. Mm-hmm. Of course, he was getting ready for the role. But, you know, you could see his body's like he's more muscular and stuff. He's changed a little bit, which is interesting. But yeah, so I'm excited about the next episode.
I'm excited about the next episode because this one has kind of re-sparked my interest. And I like the, even though it was full of action, there's still like character development, and that's what I'm looking forward to. Like I said, I'm excited to see the dynamic between Tara and Jesus and what Rick is going to do now that he's been confronted. And I mean, pretty much all the head honchos of each attack. I want to see what happens next. Yeah. I'm trying not to have too many predictions and set myself up too high, as you know.
If it's anything like this episode, I'm happy.
First one was really a big letdown, but this one's coming back, sucking us right back in. Well, we've come to the end of the show. Thank you all for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear, please tell your friends and everyone you know. We love to get new subscribers, and you can send email feedback to talkback@thewalkingdeadgirl.com. And as always, this is Jasmine.
And I'm Michael.
Stay alive.